Hey, look, welcome along to the Pastor's Heart. Dominic Steele is my name. It's great that you could join us. We've got as a guest today an old friend, Archie Poulos, is with me. He, of course, you, of course, are lecturer in ministry at Moore Theological College, heading the Center for Ministry Development. And Archie's here to talk to us about the whole subject of the professionalization of Christian ministry competencies that are expected in Christian ministers. But before we get to that, we're going to talk the Pastor's Heart, Archie. And thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you. Thanks. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. And, mate, let's talk the heart of the pastor and your heart. Well, as a pastor, as a father, what's a journey of complexity that God has led you through? Yeah.
One of them is that some of you know, then you know, that we have a son who has a disability. Mm-hmm. And I remember the day that we found out about it. He was about 18 months old. We were down at the hospital at the genetics clinic, and they told us about his condition. I remember the geneticist saying to us, most people don't agree with this. They spend the next 6 months pretending it isn't true, throwing toasters through the wall and all that sort of thing. And both Ainsley, my wife, and I were crying and heartbroken by it. We went and had a cup of coffee afterwards, and I remember saying to Ainsley that our son has a heavenly father who loves him more than his earthly father does. And you've got to cling on to that because you keep wondering, why is this fair, God? And I don't know why God has made him as he has, but he is God's son and he could do anything and he's chosen to make him the way he has. And so I'm thankful to God for that.
How has having little Archie shaped and changed you?
In the first, when he was born, I think every pastor wants their son to proclaim Christ, to be the great preacher who sees thousands come to salvation. And of course, that's not going to happen. And so God is going to use him in other ways. And so you've got to change your expectations and your desires and your prayers too.
And what are the issues now? Because he's really heading into teenagers.
Yeah, he's 14. One of the things is that ability to discern what right and wrong is going to be strangely formed in him. And so while he's able to do things, that capacity to work out whether he should do things or not is something that's going to be challenging. And so one of my constant prayers is that God would hardwire right ways of acting and even right ways of thinking. And God is answering that prayer. One of the lovely things I see in him is he prays more than I do. If it's raining in the morning and he wants to do something, the first thing he does is he turns to prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great example to
awesome?
Us. Yeah.
So, well, let's turn to our topic of the day and the professionalisation of Christian ministry. And as you and I talked about you coming and having this discussion, my first thought went to John Piper's book, Brothers, We're Not Professionals, and Archie's saying we need to be more professional. Do you know?
I'm not sure professional captures the idea, actually. What we need to be is wise.
Mm-hmm.
And the scriptures keep calling on us to grow in wisdom, and that's really what I'm on about. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I am concerned about is that the graduates of our college are fantastic people.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have is a fantastic theological education, and if that's the case, how come the world isn't being transformed?
Why aren't we doing better than we are?
That's right. We each year, God in his goodness has about 50 people who we graduate out of the college, and most of those I would desperately love to have as my minister. Mm. They're really well educated. They have a character and a conviction that lives for Jesus. And so you think, why aren't we doing any better? And that's what started the exploration, really.
Mm. Well, what have you worked out?
A whole lot of things. So working out, trying to work out what it is that we do.
You have zeroed in on some kind of skill kind of issues, haven't you?
Can I step back from that a little bit to start with? And that is that one of the things that I think all of our graduates and we generally have is a wonderful provision from God, and that is that we are passionate about the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to say we must thank God for that and never give it up. But one of the consequences of being passionate about the truth is that unless something has been proven theologically has been tried and tested over many years, unless that's the case, we just dismiss it. And so our passion for the truth, what it can do is lead to a narrowing down of the way that we think about things, and that is we only think theologically. And I think that is a danger. And in fact, the Bible itself is quite clear on this. That, you know, you go to Proverbs chapter 30, and it says, look at the patterns of life. So the writer of the Proverbs says, go and have a look at the lizard, go and have a look at the locust, go and have a look at the hyrax. I don't even know what a hyrax is, something from Harry Potter. But
go and have a look at the CEO, yeah, go and have a look at the doctor, the professional, and
learn from them. It's scary and risky to do that, because it means you actually need to apply that theology that we have been given to work out, is this true to Christian faith? Mm-hmm. And therefore you embrace it. Is it against what the Bible says, and so therefore we must reject it? But there's a whole lot of stuff in the middle that we could accept or we might not accept, depending on the situation that we are in, the different circumstances. And one of the dangers that we have is to merely just go for what's safe theologically. And Proverbs says, go and have a look and learn from these other things.
Okay. So if you and I were to go and have a look and learn, you mean you're doing it as a 3-year study, we're doing it as a 25-minute discussion. But if we just do the helicopter of coming, say, well, okay, well, I've got the Bible, what can I learn from the professions, you know, about how do I become a better leader of the staff team, of the ministry task that God has given me to see more people come to know Jesus in our patch, in our time. There's this, first you did some digging and found this man Quinn and his model. So tell us about him.
Before I do that, what we talk about generally in terms of clergy is character, conviction and competency. And so the character and conviction you must have, because the worst thing to have is somebody who is really competent who doesn't love Jesus. He'll just lead people down the pathway to hell. And so I'm actually not dealing with character and conviction. I'm saying you must have those. But when it comes to competency, that's when I started digging around, and I came across Quinn's material.
We'll put it up on the screen, which will be helpful for people who are watching us. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, if you go to thepastorsheart.net and you look up, look up the interview with Archie, we'll put this image up, this image from Quinn, and perhaps you can tell us about this graph that we're putting on the screen now.
Thank you. What Quinn did in the 1980s, he's one of the experts in leadership from Michigan State University, which is one of those places that they do all this sort of work. What he did was he said, so much on leadership has been determined by looking at what good leadership is in different settings. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to step back from that and looked at all the literature and work out theoretically what you need in order to be a good leader. And so you can see that on the screen. I won't worry about the eight names. So he came up with eight categories, which he called competing values. And they compete because if, for example, you're in the purple one, you're an innovator, you're an entrepreneur, if you focus your attention there, it comes at the cost at some of the other ones, say in the green or the yellow or the pink.
So I'm just looking here. The eight characteristics are innovator or broker, producer, director, coordinator, monitor, facilitator, mentor. And you're saying that he's saying that every leader needs to have those skills, have those competencies. And so we're talking the leader of the band at church through to the CEO of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, particularly the CEOs, but he's saying everyone. So if I can just explain that a little bit more, the purple one, which is the top right-hand one, really is that whole entrepreneurial thing. Looking for opportunities for the gospel is the language that we would use. The pink one is we'd call it discipleship or mentoring, what holds our clan together. The bottom left-hand one, the green one, is our processes, making sure that we do what we do, organising things well. And the bottom right-hand one, those yellowish sort of colour, is how do you engage with other people that are outside of your group. So, and what Quinn says is you need, as the leader, to be competent in all eight of them. And if in any of them you are subcompetent, whatever that might be, the whole thing will fall over. So take, for example, the church leader who is absolutely disorganised and so can't get the outlines done on time,
has the agenda for
the agenda,
council.
All of those sorts of things. It might be a great discipler of people, might be a great innovator, but as a result of that, the whole thing starts to fall over, starts to unravel. So there is a, Quinn argues there is a minimum amount of competency that you need to have in each of those eight to make the whole ministry function well.
And how did it go when you started to road test these ideas with some of the other Christian leaders around the place?
I actually didn't use this one because the problem with it, there's a couple of problems with
it. Oh, well, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
What's your
One of the problems is that how do you know which ones you should focus on? So say my strength is as an innovator, but I'm in a setting where I actually need to do the green ones well. You know, we've got a whole church where safe ministry hasn't been conducted well. Well, that's in the green area. And so how do you know that I, even though my preference is to be the innovator, I actually need to work at the coordinator and monitor level, and his model doesn't help you with that? His is called the competing values framework. An Australian lady came up with the integrated competing values framework, which is the other slide.
We'll put that up on the screen now. And so this has really got four main quadrants. We've got the innovator in the top right, the entrepreneur, the developer. What's the developer do?
Yeah, the developer develops the people that you're with. And so it's discipleship, it's mentoring, taking God gathers his church together and gathers us as a people together. And the task of the developer is to take each person from where they are to be more like Christ. That's the language that we would use. But in the secular world, it's being the best employee that you can be.
Or the best band leader or the best community group leader, Bible study group leader or whatever it is. Now, the monitor and the deliverer, I take it that's monitoring how well we're going, measuring how well we're going.
And making sure it happens.
Delivering?
Making sure it happens, that's deliverer.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the things we don't do very well is monitor. We just say, please go and do this activity, and we don't monitor how well it's being done. And so therefore our delivery is reduced. And so monitor and deliverer go together.
Mm-hmm. Now, broker, you've identified as a really important one that many leaders in our tribe of Christianity don't even really think about.
Can I come back in a sec? I just want to do the blue thing in the middle, which is the biggest part of the integrated competing values model. And the integrator is that ability to work out what is the right thing to do now. Which of these quadrants should we be focusing on? Because church goes through life cycles. We have different events that come up that need different sets of skills. And the integrator, it says it there on the thing, the integrator can critically observe what's going on. So I see things happening and I can work out from that how we should be going. It's really like the Book of Proverbs. And the other one is the ability to reflect internally, because one of the things that causes our ministries not to be optimal is that we live for our self-protection. And so we function in order to make ourselves look good or to perform the way that we want to perform, rather than reflect on something has happened, what have I learnt about myself and how I engage in the ministry. So the critical observer is outside, the reflective learner is inside. And in fact, I think we would probably use the term wisdom for that. Learning from the orders and the patterns of the world. And so that's what this adds to it, so that you might start your ministry. If you're doing a church plant, for example, you would be in the innovator area. But as your church plant grows and God brings people to you, you want to develop the people.
Yep.
But then as you're developing people and the ministry gets bigger, when you're bigger than, say, a cell group, a home group, a Bible study group, you actually need processes to make the whole thing work.
Yep.
And so that moves you down into the monitor and the deliverer.
Yep.
And then as you're starting to engage in the external world, that's broker. Now, you asked about broker.
Mm.
It's interesting. In my research at the moment,
help me in the work that I'm doing if I'm to be a better integrator. What do I do there? What are the kind of things I'm going to want to do to work that out?
Yes, thank you. I think the first step of it, which is what this does, is identify what you are like as an integrator. Are you good or are you poor as an integrator? And then there's a whole lot of things you can do. One of the things is learning to be a reflector is a hard thing. And particularly for those of us that are in ministry, because there are so many demands on us, Dominic, you have to deal with this issue, then you move on to the next thing, and then you move on to the next thing. And so what we do is we tend to put out fires rather than think, is there a better way that I could have done that? Or did I do that because something in me, that's just my natural disposition? And so you need, if you want to be a better integrated person, you actually need to be able to slow down and reflect. Sometimes you can get it by having somebody who you can talk to about it, because when it all comes from your own mind, you can just keep telling yourself the same things over and over again. But to talk about something that you've gone through with somebody else, and they say, have you thought about this? Or have you thought about what they're up against with you? And so that reflective learner happens because you've had a chance to slow yourself down. Likewise, the critical observer, that we've dealt with the thing is often often good enough for us. But sometimes you've got to, again, take that time and step back and say, is there something in the system that we operate in that caused this to happen? And so rather than dealing with the thing that presents to you, you actually think, this is happening because of something else. And so we start to work on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
So I can give you some examples, but our time will run out if I start on that.
Now tell me broker. Because you're saying we're not generally good at this.
It's interesting. In the research at the moment, Quinn, I think, is wrong. Quinn,
okay.
Yeah, that first diagram.
Okay, yeah.
Because he says that all of these eight categories...
You heard it here first.
I hope it doesn't get back to him. All of these eight categories can be determined independent of the sort of system that you're in, of the sort of ministry you're doing, of the type of job you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is wrong. The setting that you are in and the expectations of you, of other people, of the people who consume what you are offering shapes what you do. And so I think Quinn's wrong in that there's no universal one. So what I have tried to do is take, not Quinn, but the Australian modification of it, and then ask clergy what it is that they think the skills are that are required in order to do ministry well. And so I've talked to 50 clergy about this.
All right. So you went and said, what skills are you needed to do? And I guess some of them would have said innovator. Some of them would have said developer. Some of them would have said monitor. Some of them would have said deliverer. But you're telling me not many of them said broker.
Yep. Of the 50 clergy, there were all of the other things that were said, I can map against that diagram. Of the 50, only one person said something that you could put in the broker category. And in some ways, as I go back and listen to the recording of it, was because I prompted him to say
right.
it.
Okay.
And so it's something that we don't do naturally. So it'd be worth exploring what broker means.
Mm.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Because you see it happen well in the corporate world all the time, and you don't see it happen well in the ministry world.
No. So to give you some examples, I think if I can break up brokering into three types of brokering, one is partnering. So people that you can and should partner with. So in our setting, the church next door. What we want to do is we think we have to run a better type of church than the church next door because they'll take our people. That is actually thinking from a view of scarcity rather than blessing and abundance like God does. Now, all the people in this world are made by God and owned by God. There are enough souls in the world to be willing to share people around. So one of them is, how do we partner with the churches nearby? But there are other Christian organisations that exist, for example, AFES in student ministry, MTS in the training of apprentices. We've got CMS, so this is me talking my Anglican setting in Sydney, Church Missionary Society.
You've got Church Missionary Society, missionary organisation.
Different missionary organisations.
A group for MTS, a group for raising up ministry apprentices, and the university
student ministry.
IFES.
And you've got others, so you've got Christian book publishers, for example, as well. Now, they're all doing the same sort of work as us, but when we want to do something, we often naturally think we have got to produce it rather than partnering. So to give you an example, often in our churches these days, we've got our preaching program, and we say our home groups, our growth groups, need to be studying the same passages that are going to be preached on. And so we then, as the ministry staff, set about writing the material. for the home groups. That might be appropriate, but we do it without even seeing what else might be out there.
Mm.
And or, for example, we decide we're going to run an evangelistic course. And so we write it rather than getting introducing God. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to give you a free plug
there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so we actually aren't good at partnering. Our natural response is we need to create it ourselves because it might not be absolutely theologically accurate. Now, there are times where you say, no, this is theologically inaccurate, so we have to do it ourselves. But we often make that decision before we even look at what else is out there.
And so many times we could be seeing, look, I don't really like this language, but I'm running a McDonald's franchise. And,
yeah.
and what I'm doing at my McDonald's franchise is not that different to the McDonald's franchise in the next suburb. Do you know, we're both trying to cook hamburgers. We're both trying to make disciples. Do you know, is that...
Yes, exactly,
I don't need to come up with my hamburger recipe. Do you know?
In fact... particularly when there's a proven hamburger recipe. Why would you make your own? You might do a better one,
mm-hmm.
but generally you won't. The other thing that it does is because we don't partner with...
And some McDonald's stores are going to be better than others McDonald's stores.
Absolutely. And so people will vote with their feet. But that's a subjective thing too, that one person likes this McDonald's store and the other person likes this McDonald's store. Well, isn't it great that we're offering both McDonald's stores mm-hmm. so that the world might hear of Jesus?
Mm. So how could we get better at brokering? How can I get better at brokering?
I think one of the things, so that's in the partnering level. I think I'd want to say whenever you are thinking that me or the staff, you're having staff meetings, say, this mm-hmm. afternoon, and we say, Mr. X, Miss Y, would you do this thing? And I want to say one of the first questions to ask is somebody else doing it as well or better than we could?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the mm-hmm. obvious ways of doing it. And we need to realise that you will not get anyone that is 100% aligned with you. So you've got to work out what it is that you are willing to accept. Because you won't get the 100% alignment. The trouble is when you get the 100% alignment, it often won't be as good a product as what the 98% alignment is. So we've got to, so it's a bit risky doing that, but you've got to be willing to ask that question up front about who can we broker with. So we do it naturally with our missionary societies because there aren't many churches that can send their own missionaries out, but we tend not to do it with other things. And if I can say... if you are willing to do that, it liberates you and your ministry team to be doing other things, which is a blessing to the gospel going forward because you actually have freed up time for you to be able to do other things. And it's usually a blessing for the congregation members too because they will actually get something which is probably better than you would have produced. So that's at the partnering. Can I talk about the other two?
Perhaps? Yeah.
This is just by way of example. It's much wider than this. But the second group... that we need to broker with are people that we minister beside. That is not necessarily partners, but you're just in the doing of ministry, you rub shoulders and you cross each other. So an example would be, say, the Christmas carols.
Mm-hmm.
The local council says, we are putting on Christmas carols. Well, you could say, well... you won't preach the gospel as clearly as we will, so we'll have nothing to do with you. We'll put our own Christmas carols on. Or you could say, well, how would you like us to help you? We've got resources. Most of our churches have got good music resources. Our churches actually know the Bible and that sort of thing. So I'd at least want to be having the conversation with the local council about whether we might work together rather than automatically dismissing that we might work together. And who knows what God might do? The little conversations you have as you go to the council chambers and you talk to the staff and maybe some of the aldermen, as you speak, there could be events that have gone on in the lives of these people in the past that this just resonates with and God uses it to draw them to faith. And so that second group is those that you work beside that aren't your natural enemies. We need to work out how do we work with them? So that's the second one, or the street stall. They close the street here or something, and so they run the street stalls. You've got a church right next to where the street stalls are being run. How are we going to work to optimise what God is doing here rather than just ignoring it?
Now, we've got a couple of questions that have come in on Facebook, and so let me just hit you with those quickly. Jonathan Jung has asked, what should the reasonable expectation of the pews be for the ministry employees' level of professionalism? And he's particularly thinking in Asian churches.
Yes. That's impossible to answer just now because there is no... Quinn is wrong. It depends on the setting that you are in. I think if you take the integrated competing values framework, that model which has the integrator in it, I think the minister needs to be responsible for all of the six categories, but needn't be the one that enacts all the six. And so if the example I used of having the minister that just can't organise things, then what you've got to do is find the person who can be your organiser.
Now, do you can I just push that then? That makes sense in terms of organiser. Will that work in terms of visionary? Do you know, in that if I'm the senior person, I get that I can delegate organising, I get that I can delegate monitoring. Do you know, I get that I can delegate developing the system, but can I delegate where we want to go next?
No, I said take responsibility, not necessarily delegate. Oh, they're two different things. So read Ecclesiastes. There is nothing new under the sun. What has been will be again, says the writer to Ecclesiastes. And so I think it makes a lot of sense to find the people that are good at observing the world around about us and saying, how might we use the order of our world to see our Saviour proclaimed? And so that's what I mean about you take responsibility. You don't need to be the one that goes and observes everything, but you need to take responsibility for observing and understanding the world, and then you need to take the responsibility of saying, and this is the pathway that we're going to go down, taking good advice, but that's what I mean. So it's not delegating, it's taking responsibility for, but using the gifts that God has given us. The people that are in your church are always determined by God, always set up by him. He has always brought
and
the right
people.
And he's
given us the gifts we need.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Mark Lewis has asked, how important is professional development to someone who's in ministry? What areas of development do you see as helpful to a ministry worker in 2018?
Yes, that's a fantastic question. we must always be developing.
We should have asked that question at the beginning.
If you are not developing, you'll stagnate.
Yep.
If you are stagnating, you'll protect yourself, and so you'll even close yourself down much further. And so it's a really important question that we keep developing. What must we develop in? Here is where you must bring back character and conviction. The most important things to keep growing in are, like Paul says to Timothy at the end of 1 Timothy chapter 4, watch your life and doctrine closely, persevere in them, because you'll save both yourself and your hearers. If you don't keep growing, you'll lose your soul, and it will also be negatively effective on the souls of the people in your ministry. And so character and conviction is so it's not just professional development, but competency is one of the things. And this is what my hope is for this doctorate. I don't care about a piece of paper. What I care about is us being able to think about the breadth of what we must take responsibility for, rather than merely saying, I am good at Bible, I am good at theology, I pray for my congregation members, that is enough. Well, that is certainly the absolute minimum. If you're not doing that, you shouldn't be in ministry. But at the same time, you need to take responsibility for these other things. So it's being theologically pragmatic is what we need to be. And so that's what you need to develop in. And so some of the skills are skills that you can learn. The skill of asking the question of, is there an organisation outside of us that can do this as well as we're striving to do? That's just a skill to learn.
Great. All righty. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us, Archie. It's been great to have this discussion with you.
As you can see, I get excited because I want to see our Saviour is worthy of all praise and glory. So I want all of us to do better at it, at promoting his name.
It's been great to have you with us. Now, next week on The Pastor's Heart, our guest is going to be Kanishka Raphael and Luke Tattersall, and we're going to be talking about the competency of how to preach Christmas well. And so we've got two great preachers coming in to talk to us, and we'll be talking to them about which of their Christmas sermons have worked and which ones haven't, and why they worked and why they didn't, and what we can learn about the task of proclaiming Christ at carol services, at gingerbread events, at and on Christmas Day and Christmas Eve. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.